Colin Callis with Business Unusual. We want to talk about saving the world tonight.
We do. In fact, do you know how many times the finance minister mentioned the word climate in his speech today?
I can't say I was listening that closely because I kind of was familiar with the speech. I had the speech. None.
A fair guess. It was a whole one. And principally just to say that...
And when he said this political climate...
Yeah, there were a couple of mentions of the environment, but referring to it in that respect. The climate in this case was the carbon tax that was announced last year that has now started getting some funds. And he said there'll be $1.75 billion raised for that. But that seems to be kind of little given the size and the impact that's coming down the road for us. But as most people agree, politicians certainly, and I suppose us as electorate, tend to focus on the here and now, even though scientists, economists, the world bodies like the UN have long asked us to say, listen, this is a big thing, it's coming, you've got to do something about it. And corporates have been another one that was also like, well, we get that, but we've got to give, you know, return value to shareholders, and we're focusing
now.
On and it's all about now, yes. This is the same thing, you know, in preparations ahead of for things like coronavirus. Then people were saying, look, you really got to be spending a bit more, taking more time, prepare for these things. It's going to happen. It's a question of when, not if. And we kind of said, yeah, we'll take care of it when it happens. And now that it's happening, you know, we're like, oh, boy, where did this come from? How did we not know? So this evening I wanted to focus on a guy called Larry Fink, who heads up BlackRock, the world's largest asset management company. And it's astounding that they have over $7 trillion in assets that they manage.
No, you don't say it too quickly, because I don't know if we appreciate the amount of $7 trillion. That's like 100 trillion rand. In terms of today's budget, that's enough to run South Africa for 50 years.
Yeah, it would be, if this company was a country, it would be one of the third largest economies on the planet, just by the funds they look after. And it's everything from, you know, you can go and invest in one of their portfolios and options, right the way through to large government pensions. And it's kind of because they do look after a lot of pensions that he in particular has taken a longer term view. He founded the company sort of in the 80s. Went public in the 90s, and he is a billionaire now, partly because when he did register back then, or it did list back then, of course, he would have had some shares. Those shares are over $500 now and worth a fantastic fortune for those who are holding it. But about 6 years ago, he started writing this annual letter, and it's become something almost like Warren Buffett's conference, where people will go and say, well, not only do they have an amazing ability to shift the markets because there's so much money they invest, but he supposedly, through an investment in technology that he decided back in the 2000s, would sort of scoop up huge amounts of information and ensure that all of those teams are pouring over to really understand not just the opportunities, but the risks. And so each successive year with his letters to the global CEOs, he's been sort of asking, and I think it's fair to say compelling them in some respects, to say, I need you to focus on these things. He started with things like, have a purpose. Don't just go for profits. Don't worry with a short-term thing. I want you to make your companies do something good for your communities. Start investing and embracing diversity and building things out like that. And this year, he said, I want you to focus on climate change. And he did think that might have been a bridge too far, perhaps. But Davos, the discussions there were all around the climate. I think that the tipping point might have come now with this particular one, with corporates now finally saying, right, let's do it. And it's the way he's approaching it that I think makes it slightly more nuanced than just saying, right, get rid of all the fossil stuff and give all your money over to some crazy new sort of thing. And in that respect, you know, I think future generations might look back and say, well, here was the point at which the generations, the Greta Thunbergs of the world, said, you're finally taking our futures into account, and we can get to thank you for that. And they'll be thanking a boomer, because he's about, he's 57, I think, if I'm not mistaken. No, he's 67, if I'm not mistaken.
67. Now, he's been around the block, has Larry Fink, yes.
He has. And so as an aside, just to get a sense as to, well, who would possibly be the movers and shakers for the future, I went and did a little test to say, how old were some of this century's, or this and the last century's, best world leaders in 1920. So
you chose 1920 because it's 100 years ago.
It's 100 years ago. Okay. So if we imagine, we don't know who those amazing figures are going to be of this century, but what were the ages of the significant ones of the last century at that point? Pope John Paul II was born in 1920. Nelson Mandela, 2 years old. JFK, 3 years old. Deng Xiaoping of China, he was just a teenager. Walt Disney was a teenager. And there's a whole bunch of these things that clustered around people of around that age that in the next 20 to 30 years would then come into making a real change for society. Some who were slightly older would have an earlier impact. Adolf Hitler in 1920 was 31. Yes. And his impact was felt a lot sooner than that.
Absolutely. But it is so interesting, isn't it? Because we don't know who the shapeshifters of the 21st century are. I mean, we've got a pretty good idea that the people we know of now, Warren Buffett, born in the last century, is a significant figure. We know the Facebook guys, the Google guys, all of those guys have changed the world very substantially. Will they be remembered 100 years from now, is, I suppose, the question.
That is a very good point. And I suppose, again, another bit about the sort of philosophy that this company has, and there's many others have it, I'm just using them as an example for this one, is this notion of shifting to long-term thinking about investments. And I mean, you've certainly more than most of it have conversations that says, look, you don't try and make a quick buck, you're going to invest, you're going to think, how long do you want to invest, and when are you looking to get back for that? And this is another area where, for a lot of investors, a lot of corporates, it's kind of challenging, because if you think about the sort of millennials and Gen Zs who are sort of in the work environment now, they're looking to say, well, I'm going to be paying money into pension plans or towards pension plans, and I'm going to look at get out in 2050, 2060, 2070. And for the largest cohort that has come through for the population, well, they're already in the start of their retirement. These are the baby boomers. And they're actually realizing, wow, life and medical history or medical advance has been good. They're going to have a good, long, fulfilling life. And the amount that they've put away, supposedly for their pension, is not looking so good. And lots of things are eating up at what the traditional ones were. In fact, you might think as a result of this, Larry Fink and BlackRock are sort of big fans because of their view. But you go to France and you ask people what they think about BlackRock, and they're definitely not happy with it. They've actually sort of see him as being partly responsible for the French government's plan at changing their pension plans. Yeah. And they've got this massive, very, very well-funded but not sustainable way of ensuring that people would be able to take those retirements. And I was surprised myself, not unfairly, ballet dancers in France can retire at 42. Now, you can't imagine a professional dancer probably would have to stop dancing at 42, but not retire. You'd think you'd go in to do something else.
You can coach, you can teach, you can... No, I don't do ballet commentary. No, they don't do that.
Yeah, but you sure can't imagine that a pension is going to be able to pay for you well into your 80s. The rail networks and their longest transport strike is sort of ongoing in France at the moment. And there, the retirement age is between 52 and 57. If we're going to live to about 80, how are a smaller population, having fewer children, working more gig-style jobs, paying the kind of money into government funds to cover that amount of cost with so many older people?
And so, I mean, bring us back to Larry Fink then, and, you know, how do we fix the world? Because the world has got so many short-term, immediate challenges, and it's those ones that have got to be addressed. And then the long-term planet is burning stuff. I mean, you've been in Cape Town this week. The temperature in Cape Town yesterday was hellish. It's been a cool summer, as I understand it, in Cape Town this year. But yesterday was one of those little reminders that the world is getting hot and hotter.
Yeah, well, a lot of new money, new tech money, was just spending money into the, let's go into Tesla, let's go to Mars. And he's actually saying no, he's keeping a lot of the funds invested in very large energy companies, the guys who kind of got us into this mess. He's saying, I'm not withdrawing my funds from them, because they should use the very powerful position they have now to invest in the things that'll get them out of it. Possibly they are the best ones to understand how to change their industries and start extracting the value from those things. Not everybody, again, agrees with that. They would prefer to do something else, including in things like Boeing and other defense companies, where they say, listen, if you want to be this, you know, good, responsible investor, why are you investing in these things? And it says, because, you know, managing peace and waging war, this is all part of an economic thing, and you need both sides of it. And perhaps by way of sort of an illustration, because you tend to think when something new comes along, you just get rid of the old one, and possibly the one that's used a lot is the automobile and the horse. But what people probably forget, that if you had to look at large cities at the turn of the century, when the cars were first coming out, and they were terrible, they were rubbish, actually. It wasn't that everybody was saying, oh, can't wait for a new car. They were saying, man, there is a lot of horse manure on these roads. And not in just horse manure, dead horses. When you've got thousands of horses running around the city streets all the time, they die.
Yes.
And you've got to shift them off and move them out and make a plan. So anybody who still wants to sort of rail against this and say, no, carbon's fine, we'll just keep using it, they're a bit like those crazies who are standing in a sea of horse feces, thinking that somehow the horses will get us out of it. The point is, where we are now, we've got these very bad cars, but the bets have to be made on getting better cars. Fixing the problem we have with carbon is the way we get out of this.
And perhaps this is capitalism's chance to redeem itself.
Well, capitalism, and people probably challenge this one, but for most of our significant advances, and certainly the sort of times when society has really taken a big leap forward. It has come from somebody saying, here's a whole lot of money with a crazy idea. Let's see what we can do. Not somebody saying, let's sit in the corner and try and do as little as possible.
Let's regulate.
That's not going to way to do it. However, and maybe this is the final point, I think when it does come to investments and the track record that they've got so far, if you're willing to take a bet on the long term, certainly with what he just said now, then if you're a millennial and a Gen Z, then this might be the investment that's going to pay off for you.
Colin Cullis with Business Unusual. Thank you, Colin Cullis. An unusual perspective on the future. Colin Cullis on a Wednesday night. Coming up in a moment. Oh, by the way, both of you, Wendy Nola and Colin Cullis. I was at a thing the other day and a man came up to me and he told me that you were his favorite people. So I punched him. Exactly. I mean, who was he? How dare he say that you're his favorite people? But you're his favorite people. Well, you were. When he comes out of hospital, maybe I'll give you his number and you can send him a get well soon card. But Colin Cullis, in a moment, Wendy Nola. She liked that. Oh, she's vicious.